Saturday, January 16th, will be The Theory of Obscurity, a film about the Residents, released in 2015. Don Hardy's film tells the story of the group's start in rural Louisiana, its artistic awakening in the late 60s San Francisco, and follows its members to present day, where they are all still actively creating and performing. That's January 16th at 9:30 p.m. at 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information on the films and more can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
My landlord's a wealthy man, a living off rent like the fat of the land.
KBOO is a proud sponsor of Eviction Free 2016, a rally in March organized by Portland Tenants United. On January 15th at 4:30 p.m., tenants will gather at Portland City Hall to demand an end to no-cause evictions, landlord retaliation, and persistent discrimination against racial minorities. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the page under Community Events.
Hello, neighbors, if you try to stop an eviction, I'd be by your side. Hello, neighbors, you know you should fight for a right for the common good.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic nutrients, and pest control. The Garden Spout is located at 4532 Southeast 63rd, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-GROW. Also by One Green World, a local nursery offering hard-to-find fruiting plants designed to help you grow your own food and decorate your yard, deck, or patio. To order plants or their 2016 color catalog, their website is onegreenworld.com, or you can reach them by phone at 1-877-353-4028. Here comes the dirtbag.
Good morning. We've reached the second Wednesday of the month of January. It must be time for the dirt bag. It is.
Maybe we should call it the mud bag.
Boy, certainly in December and now in January again.
Yeah.
This is Glenn Andreessen here beside you now until 12. Here with me again, finally, no, just 1 month off, is Jim. And we had the beekeeping edition last month, so... Jim, while Jim supports beekeeping, he's not a beekeeper.
That's correct. So. We do have bees at our place.
Yeah.
They're very popular.
I saw them and got a good place out there,
yeah.
Apparently.
They seem to be pretty happy.
It's been, the coldest it's been in the city officially is 24.
We got to 17 on the country.
We'll try to cover some bee stuff towards the end of this show. We've got a big show, Jim.
Okay.
Well, a lot of information there anyway.
Yeah.
We'll talk about our fruit of the month, or our plant of the month, is Triple Crown Blackberry. You familiar with Triple Crown, Jim?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay, good. Mm-hmm. And we'll also talk about pruning persimmon, although Jim tells me, well, there's not a whole lot to say about persimmon, but that's what I want to share then, that there really isn't, it's not a big deal to prune persimmons. But it is a big deal when we're pruning kiwi. And that's the other thing, the other pruner that we'll talk about. Also, from the current issue of the Pome News, which is the quarterly publication of Home Orchard Society, a very good article by Rick Valley, a longtime permaculturist, who has an article has an article on mulch. What good is mulching, and breaking some myths of mulch, and also some ideas of what to use for mulch and what he uses for mulch. Sometimes they're different. And Jim is going to talk about chilling requirements for fruit. I guess it's just fruit. There's probably not much.
Well, that's what we're concerned about.
Well, true.
Fir trees.
Yeah, do they? It just brings up the question. I wonder if maples and firs, and they need a certain amount of chilling.
Sure. Yeah, if they're plants that are, if you try to grow them far south, they won't be happy, you know.
So, this is what we get into when we talk about chilling requirements. Mm-hmm. How cold and how long below a certain temperature, I'm assuming.
Right.
We have talked about degree days, and that is related but different.
That's right.
But
yep.
Today, chilling.
Chilling, not heat.
Right. And that goes along with my selections for tunes this time. I was going along and thinking, well, what can I, do cold songs, chilling songs? When I was searching on my vast database, what I came across was an anthology of Ricky Lee Jones tunes, and it was called The Duchess of Coolness.
Oh, nice.
An anthology, right. So just some of my favorite selections from Ricky Lee Jones.
Great.
It has nothing to do with gardening, but
of course.
Just the title, The Duchess of Coolness, which is a pretty good moniker for Ricky Lee Jones. All right, well, let's start out then. Well, first of all, let's say if you have gardening questions, we've got it. We can make up answers for you if we don't actually know.
That's right.
But give us a shot, 503-231-8187. This is really the start of maybe next month would be the start of the gardening season. But we certainly have a lot of events and things like that that start this month and next month.
Right. This is the dreaming season.
Right.
we have our umbrella. I was thinking about umbrella pruning. I've been struggling to get out to do pruning because it's just been raining.
Yeah, and it's going to be raining, it sounds like, for the next week.
Yeah. Yeah, amazing. Well, as I said, this is we have a fireplace. We sit by it and
dream.
Read the books and dream.
Dream for drier weather, yeah. Right. Okay, so 503-231-8187. I also forgot that we have Garden Stumper at the bottom of the hour. Jim doesn't even know what this one is, but he'll know the answer immediately. It also came from the Poem News.
Yep.
Good one. He knew that, right. Yeah. Okay, so let's start out with Triple Crown. You know anything about that? I did a little research.
Yeah, and I was, when you had put this plant of the month on there, you said blackberry in general. So I was actually thinking about broadening it a little bit.
Well, that'd be fine.
Yeah, but one of the main thing of Triple Crown is it's thornless.
Yes,
which of course is nice for people to pick, nice for picking.
And I'm assuming that the triple refers to not only the thornless part, but they're large berries. If you go to the KBOO website and the dirtbag blurb on the schedule, I have a picture of a Triple Crown, and that's my hand there, and you can see that it's about as big as two knuckles worth, mm-hmm. or two segments of my finger.
Yeah, they're big. They're big berries. Interestingly, they ripen a little later in the season, mm-hmm. than the other ones do, the thornless types. But they're very easy to take care of. They're very vigorous.
Which I think that's the third part of the triple.
The vigorous.
Thornless. Part, right? Or actually, I read online, Jim. I'm sorry.
That's
but
okay.
They're actually called spines. But
spineless.
The thorns are really called spines,
yeah, right.
Technically, but
sure.
We always refer to them as thorns, and we will continue to do that.
Yeah.
But I thought, well,
it's good.
Learn something.
Good. It's right. Always important to keep the English language alive.
And the other thing, or a couple of other things that I learned about the Triple Crown was that I believe it is a USDA cross from Maryland. And I also learned that there's quite a blackberry breeding program at the University of Arkansas.
Right, and that was what I was thinking about when I was walking up to the door, is that Triple Crown, and there's Chester, is another thornless variety that we've grown, and a couple of others. And then after that, they developed ones that are Primakine, varieties. Mm-hmm. So there's one called Primark.
And let's explain what primacanes are.
Yes, primacanes, as you might imagine, from the primary, they're the ones that come out that year. So the primer, the one that grows the current season cane. And primacane means that it will bear fruit the first year, essentially. That cane that comes up in the spring will bear fruit in the fall.
Which is different than the Triple Crown and the more common Marionberry.
Right.
And the wild blackberry, the Armenian, or so now it's called Armenian blackberry.
Really?
Formerly the Himalayan.
Himalayans lost it, huh?
Yeah, it was the whoever named that one, Llewellyn, or didn't know his geography. Because they're not from the Himalayas. They're from Armenia.
Well, I always thought it was cold in the Himalayas, and you know, like how those blackberries would survive in there. But well, that's
anyway, good. That's what it's, sure. That's technically what it's called now. But they bear on, it's still those same canes, but they don't bear until the next year. And then then we call the canes next year the flora cane.
Right.
It changes. Uh-huh. It's just the second year of action is on the flora cane,
right.
Which is just to review here what Marion's are. It grows a new cane this year. We prune out the old and then save that new cane, the primacane, mm-hmm. to next year where it becomes the flora cane and it bears fruit. Right. And so you're saying now that some of these breeders are
The Arkansas program has created primacane varieties that basically take away the need for all of the training and trellising that you have to do. They still need something to hold them up, but they're not nearly as difficult. I mean, it makes it much easier to grow but the only disadvantage is that the primacane varieties, the fruit ripens later, you know, because they're mm-hmm. ripening in the fall rather than in the spring or midsummer as flora cane types do.
So there's still going to be a need for both.
Yeah, sure.
Because we want blackberries as many months of the year as we can.
That's right. But for somebody who wants to do it for an easier growing plant, the primacane types would be a good choice.
And they're available now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Triple Crown is, let's see, I wrote down a few things here. It's a pretty large berry, and what they call it a semi-erect cultivar, which means these are some pretty vigorous canes, and I've seen them grow 15 feet long, and which in my home garden is they're grown into my pear tree and everything. So the way that I've developed, and this is not unique because I've heard of other people do this, I let them grow the primacanes, that's the new growth in the canes. In the spring, I'll let them grow to the height that I kind of want my top lateral canes to be at. And then I prune it off right then. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's 5 feet tall. And then the plants will put out laterals below the prune. And those are the ones that then I train along my fence or trellis. Because it's very hard if you wait until they're done producing September-ish to bend these canes exactly where you want them. In fact, they don't bend. Mm-hmm. 'Cause they're an inch in diameter.
It's crazy, isn't it? Yeah.
Compared to Marionberries, they're huge.
Right.
And so, and it's just great. They come out at a 90-degree angle or pretty much and strap them down. And because there's no thorns, whoopee.
Yeah. That's great. When your system sounds like a good one, because that way you can train them and do it early when mm-hmm. They're easy to grow and get to train. And
the other thing that I do at that point is I really only have one primacane that I leave, even though it might grow five or six. And I prune out all those other ones. Mm-hmm. Just prune them out at ground level, as we say, and just leave that one big one. And that's more than plenty. Mm-hmm. And I have these primacanes coming out maybe every 2 feet or so. Pretty slick.
Mm-hmm. Is that the only blackberry you grow?
No, I also grow Marions. Mm-hmm. Still the standard berry for flavor. Mm-hmm. I also grow a nectarberry, which mm-hmm. is similar to a boysen, mm-hmm. from what I understand. Mm-hmm. But both of those, of course, are quite thorny.
Yep.
And will need gloves when you're working them.
Right. I think there's one other thornless. I think black diamond is another one that if my memory serves me right.
It seemed like there were several.
There's another thornless type, and they're all vigorous. I mean, that's for some reason that taking away the thorns or spines, they're vigorous. I mean, they're incredible how much they grow, and easy to grow. I mean, they don't have disease issues either, which I've noticed.
No, not disease issue, but I can tell you that the triple crowns seem particularly susceptible to the spotted wing Drosophila, spotted wing fruit fly. They're later in the season. I heard, was it Joseph Postman, I think, that kind of his way of dealing with it is just to harvest all your fruit before August 1st.
Ripe or not?
Well, that's the fallacy of his statement. But the
pickled green blackberries?
Right. So that'd be, yeah. Fried.
Right. Fried, right. Slice them up.
And I know you haven't had a problem or maybe even any problem. With the spotted wing.
You know, it's funny. I think I ignore it. If there's a problem.
You can't ignore these triple crowns when they got it because they look gorgeous. I mean, they're big and you go to pick them and they just fall apart. Yeah, they're just mush. And if you split them apart, some of the druplets or even just inside the berry, you'll see the little white larvae.
It's a big
problem.
Yeah, we don't have so much of that.
Keep it that way. My strategy was, just hope they don't show up. That didn't work.
So
I'm going to need a backup plan. And I should put out some of the very simple kind of vinegar traps that can work that way to attract them. A pretty sweet berry. And also what I've noticed is that they don't ripen all at once. It can be a two-month period. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a big period where there's lots of them, but it'll keep going too. Yeah. So it's a good berry if you have room for the vigorousness.
Yeah, I think I agree. And again, if you don't have room for that, then the primakine ones would be a good choice.
Right.
You can actually mow them down. You can cut them down in the fall, and then you don't have to. Then they'll just come up in the spring.
Right. Yeah. Easy.
Yeah.
Easy.
Yeah.
I might have to try some of those.
Yeah.
I've got. There's the raspberries that kind of do that, that will form a crop on the primakine, but then they'll also have another crop the following year on the same canes.
It's interesting. And of course, I like raspberries in the spring, or late summer, late spring. So if I don't think of raspberries as a fall fruit, fall berry, to work on that one a little bit. Stop doing pumpkin pies and blackberry tarts. Excuse me, raspberry tarts. But
well, we'll dive into now the Ricky Lee Jones songbook, if you will. Once again, this is also all of these are going to come from this. It's an anthology called Duchess of Coolsville. This first one is called Satellites. I think we're ready to go on that. Yeah, Tammy says yes, we can do that. Satellites. Here's Ricky Lee Jones.
Light the world.
Satellites. That's one of Ricky Lee Jones's. I don't know, from the 80s probably. Okay, well, we've got a call, a question from Lee on vinegar traps. Is that correct, Lee?
Yeah, as I understand from my readings of the OSU site and from people I talked with at State Department of Agriculture and others, that vinegar traps are for the purpose of monitoring the level of infestation and that do not do anything to reduce the overall numbers of these damn invasive wretches.
Lee, have you had a problem with them?
Yes. They're incredibly destructive.
Yes, yeah.
And I think it's important to note that they're not a trap to reduce numbers. They're just to give you an indication of...
Well, it seems that from the chatter that I hear or read about on the Home Orchard Society's pages or in their newsletter, that it does have some efficacy.
Well,
gardeners.
I would suggest that you talk to the people at OSU for definitive information.
Yeah, well, that always helps, and you know, when you're talking anecdotal evidence.
Right.
That's it, too. But OSU may or may not be concerned with the home gardener that has one or two, you know, plants or something like that. They're, you know, they're for the big guys, the commercial guys.
So. When they were swarming so bad above my compost pile that it looked like smoke, and that I literally went out and sprayed them with Safer, the infestation level was severe. And
yeah.
It's been a problem, you know, every year since.
And the ones in your compost pile were positively identified as the spotted wing Drosophila, not just our normal native flute fly.
And you know, that was the same year that, you know, I'm down by Salem, right above the transfer station was Olson's Orchards, and he lost 80% of his summer peach crop.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
So, you know, if we could somehow clarify whether they're a trap or a monitoring device,
yeah.
I'd appreciate it.
Well, I mean, they can be both. And they, you know, depending on how many you put out, I think would have a bigger or a smaller impact, too. But that's a good topic. I'll research that and we'll report
back.
Thank
you very much.
You bet. Thanks for the call, Lee. And good luck with those.
Clouds.
It's... Yeah, I don't see clouds of them, but I see them around my grapes. I mean, they'd be flying around. Now, our ace engineer, Tammy, was wondering about, she says, aren't you that eats bee larvae? Well, not as a general habit, but with the fruit fly larvae, if it's a small infestation and the fruit is otherwise firm, then yes, I'll do that. But I'm not real big. I'm not a big fan of fermenting fruit or rotting fruit. And when it gets so soft like that, then oftentimes the sugars are already starting to go to alcohol and other ickies.
Yeah. I operate a nursery and fruit is sort of incidental to to what we do. We haven't spent a lot of time and attention on the spotted wing Drosophila, but I've wondered a couple of things because they're the that's the type of insect that overwinters after the fruit drops with the larva in it and then it pupates in the soil. If you did a couple of different thoughts I've had, one is which we've started using now in our orchards is using landscape fabric as a mulch, which we don't want to talk about mulch, but we've started using that to keep weeds down, and I'm kind of wondering, you know, if that you might be able to control that fruit drop, they won't pupate because they can't get in the soil.
Well, that's something else I guess we should check out with OSU.
Right.
Or whoever.
Yeah. And then one thing I thought about years ago, although I don't have any at this point, is chickens, you know, running up and down the underneath the plants and eating the larva.
You know, the problem with these flying insects is that we can do all the right things. That is, you know, if it does work, maybe to mulch, to smother, so to speak, the overwintering pupa. they can fly in from neighbors who, right. who don't, and that's the, that's why I use the sacks on the my fruit, my sure. apples, because sure. I don't have to rely on everybody having the same level of pest control.
And you know, it may be that you can't get perfect control.
No, you wouldn't be able to.
But if you can reduce the numbers, and that's what's saying about the traps, too. Back in the day when we used to talk about coddling moth traps, too, and which still exist, of course, is you would talk about, the, well, you're going to get perfect control with them, but you reduce the population.
If you can get that number under what we call the economic threshold, yeah. then...
Yeah, and vinegar traps are pretty easy to make and
yeah, cheap.
Relatively cheap. So
right. It seems like if you had one every 2 feet, couldn't help it.
You've got to get some fruit flies
we'll
in there.
Right. We'll find
okay.
out.
Yep. Right. Sounds good.
Okay, well, let's move on to, we'll tackle the pruning persimmon first because that's the easiest one, apparently. I mean, the Pome News had this article on, this is just kind of a general fruit pruning thing. Well, you can train it to a central leader or an open vase or a modified central leader. Yeah. And they tend to grow, I think, just as a modified
central leader
anyway.
So right. The Asian persimmon is just, it's all the ones I have just become that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't really do much to form them. Before we do that, I'd just like to say to folks that joining the Home Orchard Society would be for those fruit nuts out there. If you know, it's a great organization, and the Pome News is full of good stuff, and we have these great events that we do. And so homeorchardsociety.org is a way to join us, and we'd love to see folks. We're having two main events during the year, the Spring Propagation Fair and then the All About Fruit Show. So it's a great way to rub shoulders with a lot of experienced folks and
find out how they deal with the spotted winged Drosophila.
Exactly. And other things, how they prune right. persimmons if they do.
And there will be some pruning workshops for them next month, and we'll talk about that next month. I think we're in time, maybe not.
Yeah, I think so.
It might be earlier than our show, which is the 10th, I believe. Is that when we're on?
The website, homeorchardsociety.org, has that schedule.
I happen to have the Pome News right here, so while you talk about pruning persimmons, I will check the schedule
okay.
of events there.
Right.
So let's see. January 23rd, Tame the Grape Workshop.
Uh-huh.
And
this is at the Home Orchard Society Arboretum at Clackamas Community College.
Mm-hmm. And then on the, February 7th, 14th, and 21st, pruning intensive. Not sure what that means.
Well, that means that as many people as we can get, it's just in the Arboretum. We're going to prune the Arboretum.
Oh, I see, on all three of those days there. Yeah. Okay. And then on the 13th, okay, we will be in time for that, is the workshop, Blueberry Pruning Workshop. And on February 20th, the Espalier Pruning Workshop. So all of those, you can get more information by emailing our Arboretum manager, Tanya. And the email is arboretum@homeorchardsociety.org, all spelled out. arboretum@homeorchardsociety.org. And then I might as well say more. On February 6th, the fruit tree pruning class. That is through.
That's
through the
community
college one. You have right. to register and probably
right.
pay for that.
That's right.
As is the February 27th. Hey, that's a good date. It's my birthday, Jim.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The fruit tree grafting classes. Uh-huh. 8:45 to 3. So that's some beginning and intermediate. There's two of the beginning and one intermediate. Information there at the Home Orchard Society.org site.
Right,
yeah, right.
Right. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on. Of course, people aren't expected to come to everything, but if you can come to one event, you'll meet some really cool people. And then, like I said, the big events, the fun one we'll talk about more next month, but where you can get your own cyanwood and graft your own fruit tree. And,
yeah.
It's great.
Oh, I'd say about 75% of my fruit growing information has been gleaned. Good word. From the Home Orchard Society, maybe 15% from Jim here, and the 10% just trial and error.
Yeah.
Just do it.
Yeah.
Okay, so speaking of doing it, persimmon. So just standard advice in beginning is, well, look at the tree, and if you have any dead branches, cut those out.
take out the dead wood, small wood that's not productive anymore. And it's pretty obvious if after several years there'll be some small wood that needs to come out. But generally, it actually somewhat self prunes itself. The weak branches will eventually just break off. And in my experience, we do very little.
Neighbor's persimmon, who I helped myself to and ate the last persimmons this month. It was great, and didn't have them in cold storage, just in my, it was in my honey house, which I didn't have any heat on in there. So, but it's 20 feet tall and, maybe leaning against their garage, or not leaning, but over their garage or part of their house. And so it's okay. Would it be okay to, step back and say, well, I maybe I need to do a chainsaw prune this winter?
Like how severe a chainsaw prune?
Well, a 3 or 4 inch branch takeout, maybe in the center, that's the tallest one.
Sure. You can do that. One thing I like about persimmons, and this is from a personal experience, is that they respond okay to such big cuts. I was a little worried about that. Some trees don't, but persimmons are a very tough plant, and I've been amazed at how well they respond.
It's my understanding from reading the Poem News article from one of our ace poem or Home Orchard Society members, Nick Rutledge, that the fruit grows on the current growth. Would that be correct?
Well, it
comes from the...
It's the second year. I mean, the branch grows out, and the next year has the flowers and the fruit.
Okay, so just like figs or...
Apples.
Yeah. So most fruits, right. Okay, not on the first year's growth.
Right.
So if you did take off a big branch, 3 or 4 inch or whatever, it's going to spur more growth, which will lead to more fruit. Now, what about thinning?
What I've also experienced is they tend to self-thin. If there's too much fruit set, some will drop. I've never thinned them.
Okay. They're good whether they're large or medium. At least that's what I learned this year, and I had
a lot. This was a great year for persimmons. Yeah. I think about, wow, we had more and more persimmons than I'd ever seen before. The thing that, what we've noticed, I've noticed with the Asian persimmon, is that if they're getting as big as your neighbors, probably some earlier pruning would have been good to keep it smaller. Mm-hmm. But generally, they don't get so big. Before I came up this morning, I was just glancing at my American persimmon trees, I planted back in about 1983, and some of those are 40 feet tall or more.
Yeah, the one in my neighborhood is
big
that.
Tree. Yeah. But the Asian persimmons, in my experience, they're not that.
Well, this one is protected by... It's in the middle of two houses and their garage, so I'm assuming it's protected pretty well.
It's warmer in the city too, and they may water it well. I mean, ours don't get quite the great amount of care, but the persimmons don't seem to need. I would not recommend giving them a lot of nitrogen and so forth.
If that's kind of the rule of thumb for maybe most fruit trees,
right?
Putting on 2-3 feet of new growth, I don't think we need any more.
No. No, and probably less would be okay.
Yeah. 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 Okay. Well, I thought persimmons would be the easier topic there, but
there's always something to talk about.
Right. Well, we'll come back. Let's continue our trip down Ricky Lee Jones Lane. This is the horses, also from the Duchess of Coolness.
We will fly way up high, where the cold wind blows, or in the sun, laughing, having fun with all the people that she knows. And if the situation should keep us separated, you know the world won't fall apart, and you will free the beautiful bird that's caught inside your heart. Can't you hear her? Oh, she cries so loud, cast her wild notes over water and cloud. That's the way it's gonna be, little darling. We'll be riding on the horse.
I'm going to have to go home and listen to these in their entirety. It's just, it feels bad to cut in there on the horses. But, Jim, you know what time it is?
Is it Garden Stumper time?
It is Garden Stumper time. I don't know if Tammy is ready there with our theme. She's ready. Okay, it's Garden Stumper time. Okay, what fruit are we talking about when we say, or when we use these terms? They're not necessarily related. The Breba crop, the main crop, San Pedro. What fruit are we talking about here? It's a general question and answer, I should say. Okay, if you know the answer to that, 503-231-8187. Once again, there's no prize.
Actually, the prize is another, what is it, 25 minutes of us.
Okay. Oh, booby prize. Right. Okay, so that's it. These terms, Breba crop, main crop, and San Pedro. All right. If you know the answer, 503-231-8187. Meanwhile, let's move on to pruning kiwis. Time to do that now? You said it was more important on... For kiwis to do it before warmer weather sets in?
Yeah. Kiwis are kind of different because they're a vine. And to get good crops on kiwis, you really need to prune them. You cannot. If you don't prune them, you'll get some fruit, but much better success by pruning. And the primary factor in pruning kiwis is to do, well, two things. One is you want to do it early, because if you wait until March or April and it gets warm, when you prune, you'll notice a lot of sap flow, a lot of what some people call bleeding, although it's not really blood, but it's sap, of course, coming out. And I think that weakens the plant. Other people aren't so...
I mean, just water dripping out of the prunes.
Right, pruning cut. So now is a good time, maybe not today, but I think...
But so you say earlier than, or you say before March or April?
I would say mid-February, before mid-February is possible.
Okay.
If you can get out there
and starting as early as
December.
Okay.
Yeah.
After it's dormant.
After they go dormant.
Yeah.
You can prune them. So, and then another factor in pruning is to remember or think about the fact that kiwis bear fruit from buds that grew last year. And they send out a new shoot from that bud, and that shoot has the flowers and the fruit on it. So if you take off all of the wood that grew last year, you won't get any fruit.
Makes sense.
Right. So, and I'm sure some of the listeners can relate to this, that the kiwi plants, especially the hardy kiwi and the fuzzy kiwi, put very strong, vigorous shoots, not unlike the triple crown thornless blackberry.
Yeah.
And those shoots can get 8, possibly 10, even 12 feet long. It's pretty incredible. And what your job is to remove a good part of that.
Well, how much? You know?
Well, I recommend typically leaving maybe 15 to 20, not even, well, maybe more like 8 to 10 buds on that shoot.
Shoot, 8 to 10 buds?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that'll reduce, means taking 2/3 of the shoot off, which is a lot.
So you might be leaving 1.5 to 2 feet?
2 feet, 2 to 3 feet, maybe. Uh-huh. Depending on how, usually with the vigorous shoots, the buds are pretty far apart. So,
oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So 3 feet would probably be, you don't have to count the buds necessarily, but
yeah.
If you cut 2/3 of that shoot back, you're going to be in pretty good shape.
And what's the drawback for having more buds?
You get, in a sense, you get less vigorous growth and less fruit production.
So it's kind of a paradox.
It is. Putting that energy into those new shoots that come out produces more fruit. And and with that kind of pruning, there's a little bit more to it than that, but that kind of pruning, you can produce 100 pounds of fruit on one female plant.
That'd be pretty tasty.
Yeah, it's nice. And fuzzy kiwis store a good part of the winter. You know, you can keep them in a cool room, like potatoes, bring them out, let them ripen at room temperature.
Not so much with the hardy, though.
Hardies, you pretty much got to eat them within a few weeks. You can make wonderful jam. You can freeze them.
Yeah.
But they don't store like the fuzzy does.
Well, let's go to the phone, and then we'll come back And so hold that thought there.
Okay.
We'll see if we have a question or an answer from Victoria. Morning, Victoria.
Yes. Hi. This year we got the yellow-bellied spotted, or whatever it was called, a sapsucker on our Gravenstein tree. And so we were fighting them off. Finally, we went online and found out that if we just put gunny sacks around the tree's trunk where this attack was happening. So we did that and kept at it, kept going up higher and higher. Luckily, we had some old seed bags. I was wondering, when do they stop attacking your tree? Can we take those sacks off now?
I've never dealt with this, Jim.
Is this a bird?
Sapsucker, and we
which is
we
kind
took
of
photographs of it because you could get like I got as close as 12 inches from it with my camera.
Is it a type of woodpecker?
Yes, I believe it is.
And what are they going after? The sap?
And we buy firewood locally, and they attack walnut trees as well because a lot of our walnut that we buy for firewood actually has the same pattern of pecking.
Well, I've seen these, you know, somewhat symmetrical holes in the
yes.
wood. Yeah.
And they go all the way around, and then they go another layer down. I mean, it's almost like a checkerboard when they're finished
yeah.
with the tree. So, our Gravenstein got attacked this year, and so we were fighting it because, we like our Gravenstein.
Sure.
And I couldn't find any information on when you can take your sacks down when they're done pecking.
Have you noticed damage to the tree?
There's definitely going to be some damage. We didn't catch it, you know.
What do you see as far as the damage?
Well,
to the
there was
tree?
An awful lot of seeping around. It was not quite a full girdling, but it was significant before we caught it. I just started going out and standing out by the tree early in the morning was when the bird arrived. And then at that time, I wrapped saran wrap around it. But he was not, the bird just kept on going above wherever I did the saran wrap. And then, of course, we looked up the information and said, we put burlap sacks on it.
When was the last that they were there? Or are they still there?
Well, about 3 weeks ago.
Wow.
I didn't see any more. I haven't seen any more. Of course, we had the freezing weather and then the rain, but nowhere can I find when you can take it down.
Well, I guess I think it would be, the bird itself may have moved on to other places. You know, a lot of them don't overwinter here. So I think, why don't you just take them down and see what happens?
That's good, okay. Yeah. Another experiment in life.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a new one for us.
I missed your stumper. Did you ask it yet?
We did.
Oh, what was it?
That we don't have an answer yet, although we have some phone calls.
No, I mean, what was the question?
It's the what fruit are we talking about when we use the terms Braba crop, main crop, and San Pedro?
Okay, apricot.
Yeah, that's a good guess, but it's the wrong answer.
Okay.
So you got a wrong answer, and we don't have an answer for you.
That's okay.
Yeah. Cool. But we'll try to find it.
All right.
We'll see. We'll talk to our peeps.
That would be great. And also wanted to say there's a free annual pruning demo that's a collaborative effort between OSU Extension and Tualatin Valley Garden Club happening Saturday, February 13th.
Where's that?
And it's going to be at a Tualatin Valley garden member, house.
I see.
On 3850 Southwest Minter Bridge Road, 9 a.m. to noon, rain or shine. And you can find the poster on OSU's website.
Okay, great. Thanks for the info.
Sure.
Okay, Jim, we got our homework.
Yes, I know. Yellow-bellied sapsucker. It's definitely a new one.
It sounds like a cartoon, but it's not. Okay, Neil. Okay, Neil.
Hi.
You got a question or an answer for us?
I think I have an answer for
the
last woman. We have red-breasted sapsuckers, not on fruit trees, but on a beech tree, and it makes a beautiful pattern. And they're very smart because they don't girdle it. They leave an inch or so between each one. We don't have any problem with that tree. It seems to be doing fine. But I don't know about apple trees.
Yeah.
Anyhow, the answer, I think, and again, because I'm a Home Orchard member and I get that little magazine, is the fig.
That's right.
That's right. Where's the victory bell?
Yeah. Tammy, we have an assignment for you now, too, right?
Say, can I ask a quick question?
Sure.
I missed the show about filberts, and I've always held back on getting them because I just would have one or two, and usually the birds and the squirrels would gang up on those. But I've heard that they actually ripen about 3 weeks or roughly before they drop, so one can go out and pick them and then not have as much damage from the little critters.
Sure.
Any ideas about that?
Yeah, you could do that. I would certainly want to pick. They do drop when they're fully ready to be picked up, and you know the shell is developed thoroughly. But I think if you pick, you could actually pick them a week or two before, and probably just dry them. They would. I think so. I've never done it, so I'm only guessing.
Well, here's something else that I've never done, but I've never heard of. But I thought that this could work, in that you could put a mesh on the ground. About the nuts could fall through, so an inch square. So, but you would
chicken wire type stuff.
Well, yeah, something like that. But yeah. you would elevate it off the ground, mm-hmm. so uh-huh. the nuts could fall through, but not be out of reach.
Think, well, the squirrels and whatever could get under. Well, anyhow.
Well, no, so they couldn't get under it.
I'm going to try it. I finally went ahead and got a couple trees, so I'll report back.
Oh, cool.
We got a whole lot of assignments here today.
That's right. Yeah. Great.
Okay, great. Good call. Good going. So just a little explanation on the terms, Tim?
Sure.
Jim?
Sure. So Brevicrop means the crop on a fig that ripens on the old wood. And in our climate, that's great. The figs that bear a good Brevicrop are very valuable because the weather when it's ripening is usually quite at the end of July, early August. It's great.
Right. So weather, you know. Here's something to confuse you. So the Brevicrop is technically the main crop here.
In a sense, you could call
right.
It
I mean, that's the right. Well, we really don't get a main crop.
Well, we do. You know, like there's the varieties like Latarula, the early ripening ones that will ripen on the new wood in the fall. And
okay, my mistake. I meant of the some like Desert King
which
will have both.
And it's a San Pedro type.
There's the that's that third
that's the connection
the third
isn't it?
Type and then, or the third
and,
term
and it's a wonderful variety and I think I'm sure I've mentioned that we went to this fig conference in Italy
yeah.
in September and came back brimming with all sorts of ideas and enthusiasm to start growing some fresh figs for the Portland market because it's just a super super fruit.
Okay, well we need to finish up on kiwi.
Yes,
and then we need to get to chilling.
Sure.
So
okay,
go ahead.
So kiwis. So basically, that what some people would say severe pruning is important, and it's also important to take off old, tired wood. So when you finish pruning a kiwi, ideally it's going to look a little bit like a backbone with ribs.
Sticking out.
Yeah, and the new canes as they grow out, you train them to your trellis, which most folks will have a trellis for kiwis that looks like a clothesline. Ideally, it's 6 feet wide, which is different than grapes, and things are up in the air. And then you train those new, you take those new canes, tie them to that trellis, and then that works out really great. And every year you repeat that performance, leaving the main cordon, which runs along the trellis, to produce, to support all those new canes as they come out, produce them.
It's similar but different than grapes.
Yeah,
and I think the take-home message is, it's better to prune than not.
Yes,
if you leave any of the new growth, you'll have fruit. Don't take all the new growth off.
Right.
Leave some of the old.
Right. Right.
Did you happen to see the Michael Pollan special in defense of food?
No.
On PBS within the last couple of weeks.
I did not.
Okay. And, hey, maybe we should have Michael Pollan on.
Oh, we should, yes. Let's see if we can
well,
get him
nice.
To come. And then one type of kiwi that we didn't mention was the Arctic Beauty kiwi. It's less vigorous than the other two and doesn't require that kind of severe pruning. It will respond to it, and you'll get better fruit. But a lot of people use it more as an ornamental or on a fence or trellis, and it's not so vigorous, so it doesn't require that much.
Okay, that's kiwis. And the time to prune is now.
Time to prune is now.
Right. Grapes could be done now through February, probably. I do mine generally in mid-February. The weather's a little nicer. And maybe talk about that next month.
Sure.
Okay, let's take one last hit at Ricky Lee from Duchess of Coolville, Living It Up. Living it up. And we do here in our gardener's paradise of Pacific Northwest, or Portland anyway.
Well, are you trying to exclude my place?
No, I'm not. Portland area.
Yeah.
Well, Western.
West of the Cascade Mountains.
That's it. By our Cascadium. Okay, Jim's going to talk a little bit about chilling hours here and what that means and why you can feel good about the cold sometimes.
That's right. That's right. Just go out there and dance around in the rain in the 40-degree temperatures. So basically, fruiting plants and most plants that grow in the temperate part of the world require a certain number of hours of cold. So they go through dormancy and then start growing again in the spring. And depending upon that, you know, summer, there's differences in those chilling hour requirements, but generally speaking, most fruit trees require 700 to 1,000 hours of temperatures between 32 and 45 degrees.
So not below that. I mean, that doesn't count.
Below it doesn't count, which is an interesting thing because, for example, Arctic Beauty Kiwi, which is native to very northern parts of its range of the like Russia and China and different places where temperatures are, like in Siberia, the temperatures drop, the fall is short, and then it goes below freezing and stays below freezing. And then the springs are short. And so they don't get a lot of hours above 32 degrees, mm-hmm. So they have an actual short chilling hour requirement compared to fuzzy kiwi and hardy kiwi, which grow in the more southern parts.
And so 700 to how many?
Well, on fruiting trees, yeah. 700 to 1,000 hours is sort of a typical in range if you've got that much. Now, in our region, this weather we've been having for the month of December, that chilling hour meter is running full speed.
Yeah.
Because you can imagine. I mean, it's 38 degrees out.
Perfect.
Perfect, you know, and 24 hours a day. You know?
Is there I'm sure there is. Does NOAA, the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration, have anything? You know what, they're
clock.
I'll bet you they do. I bet you there is. Someplace there is.
Probably, but I don't know about it.
Uh-huh.
But we never have any trouble in our area. The places where people have problems are further south.
It's too warm.
Where it's too warm. Southern California, you know, you try to grow. I remember my cousin was trying to grow some columnar apples in her backyard in Manhattan Beach. And those poor trees, those apples they produced were the size of golf balls. They were like really confused. They didn't know quite
what
to
do. A bunch of losers down there. They don't know how to garden.
And going back for a moment to these ones like Arctic Beauty Kiwi that requires less chilling, that actually can be a disadvantage in our climate because they get that requirement satisfied so quickly that once it starts to warm up a little bit, they leaf out. And the, with that particular plant, the foliage is not hardy.
No.
So if you get a frost, which is likely, after they've leafed out, then you get damage to the new growth.
So that's why we say don't push your growing region or the zone. That's what they call them, isn't it? What planting zone, growing zone,
yeah, well,
the USDA.
I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, you don't want to – that's why we can't – you got to pay attention sometimes to that and that we don't grow mangoes here.
Well, yes. That's for other reasons.
Right, however, right. Yeah, but it's the same reason that, well, you know, if it survives at – you know, in Portland, I should be able to grow it in Los Angeles. Not going to get cold.
Right.
I mean, it's.
You know,
but that's
true, right? Going south can be a problem for,
right.
And people complain. That's why, you know, they want to grow these things down there, and they've developed low chill apples, for example, that don't require the chilling hours. And are happy with it. But in our climate here, you know, we have a broad range of plants we can grow. We'd never have a problem with meeting those chilling hours. So. But it's interesting because of how soon they can come out of dormancy. And some plants have hardy foliage, so it's not an issue if they come out a little early. That's not a big deal.
Yeah, the foliage. Buds are a different...
Buds are a different thing.
Okay, well, we've got a few minutes here. Let's talk just a bit about mulch.
Okay.
Just once again, mulch. This is just a crash course here. Anything we call mulch, anything that we would use to cover the soil. It could be rocks. It could be... fabric, you mentioned that earlier today. Generally, we think of it as a living material, or was once alive material, leaves or grass or straw. But there's many items that one can use and people have used. So this is Rick Valley once again. Clean mulch materials I have personally used and found satisfactory. Okay, we've got time for this. Planer shavings from, you know, a wood shop, although he does says tropical hardwoods may contain fungicides. Do a small test with seedlings before using. Coarse, he has that in caps, mill sawdust. Coarse sawdust, in other words. You wouldn't want to use real fine sawdust because that would cut off the flow of air and water when it cakes. So the metro or city yard debris compost. Some risks of toxics, glass, plastic, rocks, etc. City leaves. He's specifically talking here about ones that have come from street sweepings. But if those leaves have come from city parks, then you wouldn't have the problem of what you might find on the street. Gasoline, oil.
Yeah, and you'd want to also be careful of walnut leaves.
Well, unless you want to use them just as a mulch on your hardy perennials, where you don't want things to grow.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what mulch does.
Right.
I mean, it keeps
right.
moisture in here and whatnot. Okay, then, this is just a list now. Lawn clippings, tree surface chips. In fact, that's exactly what I used for my pathways on Sunday. Big Deodora cedar was taken out in my neighborhood and got the chips.
Good.
Spent all day doing that. Tree surface, that's what I just said, elephant manure, or in general, zoodoo.
We got a lot of that.
But it should be herbivores. I mean, you don't want carnivores or omnivores there.
Right.
It's just dairy manure solids, cedar barn bedding. That's cedar barn bedding, not cedar barn bedding. Should have a hyphen in there. Sorry. Bracken fern, fresh scythed hay, oak leaves, pigeon manure, cut comfrey leaves, hedge clippings, walnut leaves, baled grain straw, green tree branches, shredded paper, bark mulch, and nasty daggy waste wool, sheep wool. They do have some of that.
You know, we don't have a lot of time, but I might disagree with a couple of those things. And so
and found satisfactory.
I understand, but I'm surprised.
Okay, which?
Well, things like fresh grass clippings, you know, it doesn't have, what I think is best for a mulch thing is something that stays sort of dry on the top. And the reason being that if you put something that's damp on the soil, you get weed seeds will just start to grow in it and you'll end up.
With lawn clippings, what I recommend is just a half an inch or an inch at a time. Let them dry out. Put them on, let them dry out. yeah, and then put another layer
and,
on.
And hay wouldn't be so good. Straw, on the other hand, is better. Something coarse because you don't want to have seeds. I know this from my own personal experience.
Yes, right.
That you, if you have fine material, seeds will germinate.
Okay. And then finally, because we're running out of time, barrier materials I have used. Skunk cabbage leaves, newspaper, cardboard, scrap drywall board, but not fire-resistant board, which has glass fibers. Magazines, plywood veneer sheets, blue jeans, and banana leaves. That's all our time, Jim.
Okay.
We'll be back in 4 weeks. Thanks a lot, Tammy. This is Glenn Andreessen. That's my story so far.
Yep.
It's noon, actually 12:01. It's KBO.